You are the master of your reality. This is even more true in relation to the government. Democracy doesn't just happen. It takes participation. Governments need participation and feedback from their citizens. Join Rob Hutchinson for Dear Parliament, where you get to understand the issues and engage directly with government. Dear Parliament is every Wednesday at midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
And good afternoon, and welcome to yet another edition of the Dear Parliament Show right here on High FM. Once again, a reminder, if you have missed a few of the shows previously, you can catch up with them on our website at www.chaifm.com. That's www.chaifm.com. And yeah, well, what an interesting few weeks, as usual. It's always interesting, as I always say, in Parliament. Nothing ever stops here. It's wonderful. Although Parliament has been in recess for the past few weeks, it started with the National Assembly and moved on to the NCOP, who joined the recess at about a week after the National Assembly. The second term of Parliament is now obviously being closed, and we're into the third term of Parliament, which begins in September, right just around the corner. Some great highlights in the second term. Yeah, it was quite an eventful term with the budget, national budget being presented, and of course all the departments and ministries presenting their individual budgets within Parliament. Quite a few interesting notes around that. There are many pieces of legislation that have been introduced, and or some been amended, some proposals put forward, regulations on other acts being put forward, and some draft bills being signed in by the president. We're coming to have about 32 pieces of legislation, not about exactly 32 pieces of legislation in front of Parliament, and three are waiting to be signed in by the president. But that's normal for Parliament. Lots of changes there, here and there. Many of them around financial matters concerning the budget, and other pieces of financial legislation that hasn't put forward. Some interesting laws that are going to be coming up, some new pieces of legislation put forward by several ministers during their presentation, in their budget presentation. That includes the general laws and anti-money laundering bill, and as well as the combating terrorism financing bill. I actually think that's one bill: general laws, anti-money laundering, and combating terrorism financing bill. That's quite a mouthful, and that'll be a weird acronym for Parliament to try and persuade onto people. But anyway, that's all about preventing money laundering through terrorism acts, and obviously the financing of terrorist activities and so on in South Africa, in compliance with international standards set about in order for South Africa to maintain, not get blacklisted and so on, or get out of the grey listing that we are currently in. Some other laws that have been put forward: the whistleblower bill and protected disclosures bill, which is great news for whistleblowers or those wishing to blow the whistle on corrupt activities in the private sector and in the governmental sectors, but definitely focusing more on government. More protection offered for whistleblowers, and that includes a whole lot of other things which are quite important for those who wish to actually expose corruption there, including protection services and a whole lot more, psychological counseling and so on. There were a few bills put out there, but this is just a more exposed view on that. And plenty others on the bill here, some of which I will talk about, some around health, some around equitable access to land, and a whole lot as well.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
Yes, indeed, democracy doesn't just happen. In fact, just before the break, I was chatting about a new legislation that's being introduced into Parliament in the upcoming third term. And I mentioned there equitable access to land and the Communable Land Tenure and Administration Bill. So what this does is it reignites the expropriation without compensation, as in terms of Section 25.5 and 25.6 of the South African Constitution, which talk about expropriation without compensation and addressing the wrongs of the past and providing land for all South Africans. This is now officially on the cards. It will be talked about, and the bill will be introduced to address the issue in the third term, so after September, from September to the end of the year. And that will be, I think we should all keep a close eye on that. We already have the Land Expropriation Act, which talks about compensation, which talks about expropriation with nil compensation, which kind of circumvents the Constitution. However, this is more about addressing Section 25, and as I said, which talks about expropriation without compensation. Two completely different things there. Something to keep an eye out there, and I will be keeping listeners up to date on that. Some other things happening in Parliament. Once again, the National Minimum Wage Commission has put out a call for public comment on an adjustment to the national minimum wage. This happens once a year, and they do it in two sessions. The first session is what's out now. That's just calling for proposals on how the what the adjustments should be. Should they be in line with CPI? Should there be a different amount based on other calculations, and what they should be? So the call for comment goes out now. It's as to what it should be. Then the National Wage Commission will put together a report, which will indicate three or four choices that they have put forward, which they've got from public submissions. And then the public will have an opportunity to discuss those three or four recommendations to, and then a final decision will be made by the commission based on the second round of public input. So if you want to have your say, you can do that right away, provide input as to what it should be. Suggestions are increasing it by above CPI, which seems to be the trend that's been followed for the past 3 years. In 2023 to 2024, it was a 9.6% increase. 2024 for 2025 was 4.4%. And the speculation is that there will be a 3% increase this time around, which brings the minimum wage up to just below 30 rand an hour, which is nothing really, is it? Is it too low? Is it great? Is it perfect? Yeah, it's time to have your say. Yeah. Then another thing, some interesting news there. Ramaphosa did make a few mentions and a proclamation there on changing the Political Party Funding Act. Rather interesting here. Instead of promoting transparency, this seems to do the opposite and seems to hide how political parties are funded or the amounts at which they can start declaring it. So what he's done is he's doubled the threshold for when funding needs to be declared, which definitely makes it more secretive. He's taken that up to 200,000 Rand. And if a party receives more than 200,000 Rand, only then do they have to declare it. Anything under that, they don't need to declare it in any way whatsoever. The second thing that he's done is he's doubled the amount that a single donor may give. And he's pushed that up to 30 million Rand that a single donor may donate to a political party. That raises some rather interesting questions. I would speculate as to why he's done this. Perhaps it's because the ANC fears losing the next elections. and particularly on the national scale, and therefore will require significant funding from international donors, from local donors, wealthy and prominent individuals, and so on, in order to run a large election campaign for 2029. And that, well, the more money they have, the more noise they can make, and so on. Will they do that? Will they pocket the money? Who knows? Who knows? But whatever, it gives them access to double what they should do. And of course, makes it more secretive. But on the secrecy note, and a whole lot of other things happening in there, it's not the only place political parties, institutions, and individuals, organizations, and so on do get their funding from. Joining us as usual on this show, it's becoming a regular thing, which I'm quite happy about, is Kieran Ryan. And we're going to be talking about National Lottery to start off with. Kieran, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Rob. Thanks again for having me on. Good to talk to you.
As always, a pleasure, absolute pleasure. One of the highlights of my week, if I may say so. So nice to bounce ideas off of someone and talk about what's happening in the country, good and bad. And yeah, good, interesting conversation. So Kieran, I've been talking about, we've been rattling on now for a while about funding in the public sector and public funding in the government sector. What's happening with the National Lottery? There's been a bit of talk about it, suspicious transactions and to certain nonprofit organizations. Give us an idea of what's going on there.
Yeah, I don't actually play the lotto. I've got some family members who do, but I got interested in this a little while back, a few months ago, when some of the figures coming out post-COVID. If you remember, 2020, everybody went into lockdown and a lot of people got nervous about their incomes and started looking around for alternative sources of income. That was the time that we had Mirror Trading International, which in 2020 was the biggest crypto scam in the world, basically. Send us your money in crypto, in Bitcoin, to an address, a digital address, and we will make 10% on that per month. Well, people panicked and they pulled in hundreds of thousands of people around the world. And the other thing that happened, by the way, that all folded, it was a complete scam. The other thing that happened was the takeoff of online gambling. Now, the figures here are quite staggering for online gambling. It's reckoned that this industry sucks in about $1.14 trillion, with a T, per year in rands. If you can believe these figures, and that's about 17% of GDP. Okay, I would question how those figures are put together because, a lot of these gambling winnings, so typically the house would, if they're taking 100 rand from you, they'll pay back 95. Anyway, the house has got the edge. That's sort of 5% edge. So a lot of that money is just being recycled in gambling. But the stats are truly staggering on what's happening with online gambling particularly. Why is it happening? Well, various studies have been done. People are looking for alternative sources of income. Who's doing it? People of relatively low income. But we can go into that in a little bit.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's always those who don't have the money that seem to waste on gambling. And as you say, the house always wins, no matter what. It's just geared up that way. And let's chat about that in a moment, straight after the ad break.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
And we're back in. Kieran, I'm willing to bet you that the lottery is corrupt. You're willing to take a bet on that?
What are the odds?
You're willing to bet?
No, it certainly is. There's a case just come out. There's this thing called the Special Tribunal, and it ruled that 16.5 million rand grant that was awarded by the National Lotteries Commission to an NPO, a non-profit organization called Samaritan Initiative, was unlawful and invalid, and it's asked that this be repaid. It also found that one of the individuals on the National Lottery Commission board had benefited to the tune of $21 million. Wow. And here's what it says. For egregious misconduct, negligence, dishonesty, and violations of fiduciary duties. Now, there's been a lot of work done on the national lotteries over the years. So the special investigating unit of the police have been looking into this, and they reported to Parliament, the Parliamentary Oversight Committee, a couple of months back. And they are investigating about 2 billion rands worth of monies that have been. These are supposed to, you know, why was the National Lottery set up? It was set up to basically fund social betterment projects, such as, you know, women entrepreneur development, youth development, sports, all of those kind of things. Now, 2 billion of that money is under investigation by the SIU, of which only 9.5 million rand so far has been recovered. So there's been about 15 criminal referrals to the National Prosecuting Authority. I got a little bit more interested in this when, I think the point there being that there's very little recovered, a huge amount of work done to find out what has happened to this 2 billion. I'm also interested in what happens with the winnings when you play the National Lottery, because this is the way that most South Africans who are involved in this, this is what they do every week, is they buy a lotto ticket. And I saw something quite recently, some suspicious winnings over the years. If you go back to 2020, we keep on coming back to this 2020 again. Mm-hmm. There was one winning ticket that had the number 567890. You say, is that impossible? No, it's not impossible. Is it statistically likely? That's also no. So a lot of these people who are, you know, mathematically inclined started to look at the winnings of the lotto. Now, that particular number that I've just given you there, that was for an amount of over 100 million.
100 million, and the numbers are
over 100 million. Yeah, so what I'm hearing is there seems to be, when the winnings get really big, like over 100 million, you know, the suspicions start to increase. Now, there's not to say that there is anything untoward that has been discovered. This is just that people are raising questions, and mathematicians have been looking at this very, very closely. In that particular case, I think there were 13 winners, or maybe it was a bit more, 15. So all of those winners got about 5.7 million in each. And now, quite recently, there was another one that where the winnings was 124 million. If you were of a conspiratorial mindset, you know, you could say, wow, wouldn't it be terrific if you could get inside the computer systems and hack it and rig the outcome, the numbers outcome. It would be a fantastic way to funnel money. I'm suspicious, but I don't have proof that something like this might be going on. It has been denied, by the way, that this is going on. Ituba runs it, and they've come out with a statement saying that this is definitely not the case. They've got a random number generator. But I think what is definitely more certain is that where the social betterment side of this money is going, that is corrupt as hell. And there's just all of these cases now where these NPOs have been receiving money, there's connected individuals involved in them, or they've been hijacked. This is in the words of the SIU itself. Some of these NPOs have been hijacked by connected people. Huge amount of money. And so, you know, they're paying millions of rands, you know, for example, to paint a pool. You and I, if we had a pool, we somebody came to us and said, yeah, I'll charge you 30,000, you know, we'd probably tell the guy to take a hike. They hear you're getting millions paid for painting the pool. If the money is coming from the National Lottery Commission.
Yeah. And then, to be clear, this isn't winnings from the National Lottery. This is the beneficiaries of the lottery, yes.
That's right. So there's two money flows coming out of the National Lottery Commission. The one is for the social betterment side, and the other side is the winnings.
Right.
The winnings we're less certain about, but on the social betterment side, you know, there's certainly a lot of work being done over the years on this. But there's another side to the whole gambling, the online gambling story here, and that is why so many people are getting involved in this. And this is partly to do with national lotteries, but also you've got companies like Betway and Hollywood Bets. They're just know, money machines at the moment. Mm-hmm. And again, this comes out of what happened in 2020 and people got into this gambling habit. I think it's rather like, you know, pornography. It can become quite addictive. And once you're into the gambling thing, you find it very difficult to break that habit. And there's enough winnings in there to keep you interested in it. I don't have any gamblers in my family, but I do know people who have gambled and they keep on doing it. For the odd time that they have a great night, you know, they'll go to the casino and they'll win. And so they'll go back the next week and they'll lose. And they'll lose the next time. And then maybe on the fourth time they'll win. That's how it goes.
I've seen a lot of that in, particularly in horse racing, horse betting. You get people who are absolutely addicted to it, and they'll bet on a daily basis, sometimes several times a day, and get themselves into huge debt. I had a family friend who also did that, millions and millions of rand in debt, but always chasing that one big score that never ever comes. You know, you win a lot, but then you lose twice as much, and then you always climbing back. I heard a story once of somebody who was embezzling money from a quite a prominent company, and to recover it, they started gambling, high stakes gambling, and eventually was 30 million rand in the red, because you never win, and you know, the results of that were catastrophic. But it's not an uncommon tale. It happens across the board.
Yeah, you know, a similar kind of thing is happening in a related but not quite the same way, and that is people promoting investment schemes through social media.
Oh yeah,
the AI has got so good, and I was alerted to this in the last week or so by my brother-in-law. He got this invitation to click on a link, which took him through to a video of apparently Elon Musk talking about, you know, you invest 4,500 rand on this trading platform, and we'll turn it into 20,000 at the end of the month. Now, in the course of my work, because I cover crypto for MoneyWeb and crypto podcast at MoneyWeb as well once a week, I have come across dozens of these cases, and you'd be staggered. People who are very smart, very educated. One guy was a geologist who fell for this very same thing. Elon Musk, it's so realistic, you know, there he is. And there's Elon Musk saying, well, Cyril Ramaphosa doesn't want you to know about this. So there's Cyril Ramaphosa. No, Elon Musk is wrong. I want all South Africans to get the benefit of this, you know, and I'm not against it. So it seems to be, well, with that kind of endorsement, let me click on it. So you put your 4,500 rand in, and they'll show you a dashboard on a website to reflect your winnings. At the end of the month, there's your 20,000. It's just a figure on a screen. That's all it is. And so, okay, I'd like to withdraw it. Well, I'll tell you what, why don't you put in another 20,000? And the next month, we'll turn that into 100,000. I don't really have 20,000. Let me see if I can go and, you know, borrow some. And they do. Many of them do. And then it's 100,000. And he's like, okay, now I want to withdraw. So hang on a second. We've got an even better deal for you. Put in another 30,000 and we'll turn that into half a million. And so it goes on. So in this one particular case, it was a geologist and very highly qualified, intelligent guy. He eventually parted ways with 700,000 rand. Wow. And when it came to trying to get his money out, he said, okay, eventually he says, look, I've had enough. And he's getting upset. He says, just give me my money. But he, you know, the signs are there. You know, it's like bad English. You're dealing with people for whom English is not their first language, wherever they are. It could be India, somewhere in Asia. It could be Nigeria. It could be local. And they say, don't get upset. Just all you got to do is just pay another. We've got to pay SARS taxes. Now, who on earth, you know, from a is going to pay SARS taxes on your behalf? You do that yourself. So pay another 30,000 and you'll release your money. And so he does that, and then the next thing is, oh, there's a holding fee. So we need another 15,000. So every time, and people are, and really, it's heartbreaking. Old people losing their pensions, even borrowing. Yeah. And the heartlessness and cruelty and evil of these scammers is quite hard to fathom, because they every upset is further excuse for engagement. And as long as you stay engaged, you'll pay more money into this thing. And I broke it to them. I said, listen, you've lost your money. You're going to have to get over it and make a plan. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. The interesting thing about that is that there's no, there's actually no criminal charge there. You can't go to the police and say, I was scammed out of this and this is what happened and money is stolen from me, because it's a simple fact that you willingly handed over your money and you willingly gave it to them. There's no criminal charge. There is no criminal action whatsoever. Yes, they extorted the money out of you. However, you willingly handed it over with an expectation, but that expectation wasn't met, and there's absolutely nothing that you can do about it except cry. I think I know a few people who were taken by that, as well as, I think it was called C12 or something similar to that. And I know a number of people who lost an incredible amount of money. And there the scam was reinvest, keep reinvesting, add a bit more. And they did. They paid out small amounts every now and then just to keep you enticed. But eventually, human nature, you get greedy and you put some more in and more in and more in. And the next thing, as soon as it reaches a certain threshold, then you can't get your money out in anymore. And what happens is they shut down the website, shut down the operation, and relaunch under a different name, exactly the same operation. And people fall for a second time.
Yeah, just advice to people on this is, and this is what I did. So there is a website for this particular company. It's called TradeFT. And I went and looked at the website, and I'm pretty seasoned at doing this kind of thing. The website looks quite professional. It's oftentimes, you know, you'll find bad English and you say, okay, this doesn't look right. But with AI, you can correct all of these things very easily. The thing to do is two things. First of all, go and look, do they have a legal section on their website? And if they have a legal section, go and look at where they say they are licensed to operate. If they're licensed in a place like the United Kingdom, South Africa, Australia, Europe, fine. Well, but dig a little bit further and go and see if that licensing authority, actually every licensing authority in the world, including the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, has got a search page. So you put in the company name, does it show up there? That's the first red flag. Huh. And I think the second red flag is they'll have customer testimonials. That's always a red flag. You know, oh, I made so much money, I paid off my house. No respectable company is going to have that kind of testimony there.
Not at all.
Yeah. So, yeah, go and check with the FSVA, the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. Just on the point of, a lot of times, like with Mirror Trading International, they require that you send the money in Bitcoin or crypto. The advantage that you have with Bitcoin is that every transaction is logged on the blockchain. It cannot be changed ever. And the FBI in the United States has got quite good at tracking these amounts of money that go missing. And I had one person, again, this is an interesting one. He was a guy down in Cape Town. He was a scientist. And he fell for one of these crypto scams. Send me Bitcoin and, you know, I'll turn that into, you know, I'll make you fabulously rich. He was a retired guy. He did that. Again, it was, I think in this case, it came to a few million. And I asked somebody in the crypto industry who's got the tools, can we track the wallets, the addresses where this crypto went, and they managed to do that and put a freeze on it. So this question about do you have to go to the police and lodge a complaint? Yes, he had to in that case, because the authority. And if you will go to the crypto companies like Luno, Valor, Binance, they will tell you, okay, give us a criminal case, and then we can, if the wallet is with us, we can put a freeze on it. Mm-hmm. So there are ways of recovering that. And the FBI in the United States has actually done it. There was huge theft that happened, a hack, where billions of dollars were stolen. And the FBI knew where this Bitcoin was kept. And they just kept an eye on it for years, and it went for about 5 years. And the guys got busted, believe it or not, for a simple little thing. It was two people, I think they were Russians or Ukrainians, and the one was a lady and the other guy was a man. And she wanted to buy a gift card. So she went to a Walmart in the United States and she off-ramped some of this Bitcoin, literally $30, $40 worth of gift card. And they were able to track her down and arrest her on that basis. So this idea that you can get away with theft on the scale, it's getting harder and harder.
Yeah, that absolutely is. If you're gonna do it, don't do it for $30 or $40. Just go spend $30 or $40 million, and have actually something to show for it. But yeah, it sounds just like the lottery, though, doesn't it? You spend so much money on it, and nothing ever happens. No one wins. Only a few people seem to win. And you never. What I found about the lottery is that you never know anyone. You always hear about. You always know someone who knows someone who knows someone who knows someone who won the lottery. But have you ever come across anyone that you've directly won it?
You mean the big numbers? No, small numbers.
Yeah, always the small numbers.
2,000 rand.
Yeah. So you kind of sit back and think, oh, do these people actually exist? Does this actually get won? Who knows? You really don't know.
Oh, well, that's the other thing. It's anonymous. You don't have to. You got to show up with your ID, but your name is never disclosed, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
If you have a conspiracy going on and you want to hide who's the beneficiary.
Absolutely, yeah. The truth is we will never know. It could just be going straight back into the lottery itself, and no one has actually ever won it. I mean, the odds are, and it does seem to be won quite frequently. If you compare it to other lotteries across the world, the US lottery can run for years without anybody winning it, and then all of a sudden somebody wins it, and yet here, almost every week. But let's chat more about that straight after the break.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
Welcome back to the Dear Parliament Show with myself, Rob Hutchinson, and today, once again, Kieran Ryan. Kieran, tell us more on this whole lottery thing.
I wanted to ask you a question because I'm on the Dear South African mailing list, and it's very good. It keeps me briefed on what's actually happening in Parliament. There's so much. It is infuriating. You know, I try to pull out whatever little hair I've got every time it comes down the pipe, because there's so many laws. I mean, you mentioned at the beginning of the show 32 pieces of legislation, and here we've got this national dialogue going on where no doubt the social engineers are looking at other pieces of legislation that probably should have. And I really think it's time for government to step out of the way and just let some growth happen. You know, just stop doing it. And one of the, this one was particularly interesting, was the Basic Education Laws Amendment, the Bella Act.
Oh, yes.
That was, okay, so that goes into law, it went into law in September last year. I just wanted to find out from you, I've heard a lot of sort of vague discussion on it. What are the problems, in your opinion, with this?
Oh, there are so many problems with the Bella Act in itself. What's happened now is the regulations have gone out for the Bella Act. An act cannot be enacted or worked upon unless there are regulations. Regulations determine how the bill or the act can be implemented and what should happen. So what they've decided to do is, what the Minister of Education has decided to do is put out the regulation in what she calls a modular approach to putting out regulations. So in other words, she's going to release regulations section by section, because the Bella Act is quite a substantial act. And what she's put out now is regulations around school admissions policy and other governance structures. So what the requirements are for admissions, I think the last time they did this was 2021, which is quite a regular thing. They do it every few years and say what the requirements for admissions must be. So it talks about age, vaccination certificates and proof of immunization, language priorities, zoning, and so on, which are all matters of concern. Now they've changed the zoning now to be more locally focused. So a school will have to now focus on its local community within a certain radius, whereas before you could live in one area and send your kids to school in another area. Now it's more confined to local zones. One of the other regulations is around the powers that the head of department, the minister herself has, or the MEC has, in determining who can actually stay in a school, who gets admitted and who doesn't. The HOD has the final say. Language policies are also quite controversial. I remember throughout the whole Bella Bill, before it became an act, that was one of the main priorities as to who gets a final say in what languages the curriculum should be presented in a school. There was a lot of talk from the Afrikaans community about the banning of Afrikaans within schools and moving to other languages based on the area. However, they do seem to incorporate all languages. However, once again, the head of department has the final say, not the school governing body. School governing body's powers seem to have been taken away, or considered not entirely, but they no longer have the final say in a lot of issues, which raises quite a bit of problem as well, especially because it now takes sort of a national approach rather than a localized approach rather than a nationwide approach. Other things on school capacity, there's a whole new formula on how the size of classrooms is calculated according to the area, the community, and so on, and the teacher to learner ratios, what that should be. And as we know, there's a serious problem with overcrowding in schools, not just in government schools, but across the board in private schools. And of course, these regulations pertain to private and even homeschooling, private homeschooling and governmental schools. So it's across the board. It's more regulation, more control from government over curriculum. The school governing bodies in the past had a final say over curriculum, but no longer the case. Yeah, it's determined by the HOD, which again raises problems. It's standardization of education across the board, and we know that kind of doesn't work. You know, there's issues around special needs schools as well, and how that affects homeschooling in particular. You know, what should the curriculum be? This is what you can teach your kids, and this is what you can't teach your kids, which is wrong. It's more control again from government, more centralization of education, particularly the curricula. And it's, once again, in my opinion, teaching kids what to think instead of how to think, which is a step backwards. And yeah, we shouldn't be doing it. We should be creating critical thinkers. But as we know, critical thinkers are not welcomed or not favored by government and authorities. So it's...
Yeah, I think public education is... has got such a bad reputation in this country. I mean, I homeschooled my kids, and so they missed the whole historical indoctrination, which they picked up later in life. I mean, my main focus in that was to get them literate and numerate, because these are the two primary skills that you need. all of these kinds of things. Another guy, computer programmer, taught them a bit of that. So they picked up vital skills, but I don't like the, for me personally, you know. And I see, by the way, that there's even a move away that these expensive private schools, people are going more towards the kind of, call it semi-homeschool type nice environment.
No, I think that, to me, I think that that's the way to go. You still have the issue that you have to do your final matric exam as per the government. But still, that's just for a national qualification. But yeah, there's a lot to chat about there. But let's do so straight after the ad break. It'll be a great chat.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
And that was an educational ad break there. Wonderful, wonderful to hear it. Kieran, we were chatting about home education and some interesting comments there. Any other thoughts there? Is it the way it should be? What do you think? What are your takes on the Bella Act? As a parent who homeschooled their children, it's,
yeah,
I take my hat off to you, really. Homeschooling is a full-time thing. It's not like you can just say, yeah, kids, read this or study this online. Kids will be kids and they will drift off. I struggled with my kid and, well, it was...
Kids spend far too much time in school, you know, that you start off at the age of 5 and you know, maybe all the way to 17 or 18. It's kind of like I did it. You know, if you can compress that down to 6 years or something like that. So my one son, he finished, I think when he was 15, he finished school. But we did it through an American system, which, you know, it wasn't the matric. It was the American, I forget the exact name of it, school leaving certification. But then he was able to go and study what he really wanted to do, which was computers. So by the age of 16, you know, he's employed. And he's not earning a lot of money, but, you know, he was employed. And, you know, here he is now pretty proficient. You know, when somebody's been doing something for 15 years, they get pretty skilled in it. I think it's literacy and numeracy are the things. I don't like the – even when I was going to school, I mean, my schooling was up in the center. Very suspicious about history, because history is always written from the perspective of the victor, shall we say, in a conflict. And you can get a very jaundiced view. And I think the same kind of thing, we're going to go through these whole episodes of, you know, rewriting South African history and future generations. At the moment, it's kind of cast in stone. This is the way things were. But as time goes on, you know, we begin to question that narrative. There are nuances, there are subtleties that are often missed. And the history we're taught is frankly, sometimes just plain wrong and inaccurate.
It is, absolutely. And nobody knows really what the truth is. And I've seen that particularly in South African culture from all sides, from all groups. There's lots of stories which seem more folklore than actual history. There's no fact. There are no facts and no scripts and or anything to back up these fantastical stories of victors in war and so on. And you know, it's, I mean, we all saw it as you know, children of the 70s. And 80s, we saw that shift in the narrative immediately. You know, these were the victors and so on and so on. And as it changed, we suddenly started realizing, wait, none of this is true, because now we have the opposite story. And who really won? Who was the aggressor? Who was the defender? And so on. It's exactly as, and you're right, it happens across the world. I go by the critical thinking that nothing you see or hear is real until you've done your own investigation from multiple sources and try to prove your own thoughts wrong. Then perhaps you'll find the truth hidden underneath that. But even that, we don't know. We just go with a gut feel at the end of the day. There's so much to consider that you really don't know what's happening. But yeah, there's a whole lot of other things that we do need to chat about, Kieran. But once again, we've kind of run out of time. I think we need to do a double episode here sometime soon. I so wanted to talk about Patricia de Lille and what she's done to SA Tourism Board, disbanding it.
Dissolve the board, yeah.
Well, man, what a problem there. I don't see. It's obviously due to corruption. Somebody didn't follow the rules, and somebody made a bit of money, and somebody was dismissed for some unknown reason. But you know, we'll get into that in our next show. Kieran, thanks so much for coming in to chat. Always an absolute pleasure to have you around.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it.
Fantastic. Have a great week further. And listeners, if you missed anything, please catch up on the website. It's www.chaifm.com, chaifm.com. Go there, download some podcasts, some previous episodes, and yeah, have your say on other platforms. And always remember to stay democratic, engaged, active, and responsible. Ciao for now.